Welcome to the Your Brain Uncovered podcast, where it is my job to interview pioneering scientists and authors to tease out some of their most fascinating work. We discuss neuroscience and psychology tools for everyday living. I'm Ayat Arabin. I'm a translational neuroscience student and a researcher at University College London. I'd like to emphasize that this podcast is my personal goal of bringing zero cost to consumer information to the public, so it is separate from my other roles. Now, the brain is often described as being like a muscle, right? It's a comparison that keeps on being mentioned, you know, in the general public and within conversations. We judge literacy and numeracy exercises as far more beneficial for the brain, you know, instead of running, playing, learning, on the move and all. But, you know, the brain as a muscle analogy doesn't quite work. You know, to build up your biceps, you can't avoid flexing them. And when it comes to your brain, an oblique approach can be surprisingly effective. Now, it's not surprising that working your body's muscles can actually benefit, you know, your gray matter and all. But how is it exactly that we can, you know, leverage physical exercise in a way that can actually enhance our brain performance? Now, to understand that more in depth, I'm being joined by Dr. Stone Sye on today's episode. Dr. Sye, welcome to the show. It's an honor to have you here.
Hello, Aya. Thank you for having me. Happy to be here.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Dr. Sye, for all you listeners, is a researcher at Kingston University whose ongoing work is offering tremendous insight to examine how exercise interventions modulate brain, cognition, and mental health in individuals with typical and atypical neurocognitive development. Today, he'll be offering a tremendous insight to the cognitive enhancing effects of physical exercise on cognition in children. Now, before analyzing the benefits of physical exercise, can you kindly please kind of explain the difference between physical exercise and what you mean by it and physical activity in general?
Yeah, sure, definitely. So I think physical activity refers to any bodily movement that include our major muscles or core muscles. And this type of movement will increase our energy expenditure beyond the resting level. So that's physical activity. So okay. It can be like just a walk, or it can be like you walk downstairs or upstairs, or it can be you walk from your home to the school. So all these activities can be physical activities. However, in terms of exercise, it is more about structure physical activities, and it has to target on specific intensities, like your individualized moderate or vigorous intensities. So when we talking about exercise, it is more structured and it has to be planned in advance. And usually exercise will be accompanied or designed by a program. So that's the major difference, I would say.
All right. So precisely speaking, since it's interchangeably used with physical activity incorrectly, so you're referring to physical activity as any bodily movement produced by skeletal muscles that kind of requires energy expenditure. But PE in specific is a subclassification of it, isn't it?
Yeah, correct.
All right. And what can you give us examples of PE in general?
For example, football is an exercise.
All right.
But it is part of the physical activity, but more specifically is a program exercise. So football, tennis, basketball, all this you can think of are exercise, but physical activity is more general.
All right. And well, now that we know exactly what physical exercise is, can we understand what is the relationship of physical exercise to, you know, overall brain performance? What has research found so far?
So basically right now, this is actually a very big question, and we can decompose this question into different pieces. So I think overall, the holistic view of the finding is that right now we know that exercise, either a single bout of exercise or long-term participation of exercise, can be beneficial for our brain structures, our brain functioning, and also more recent data start to talking about the benefits of being physically active to change our academic performance in children. So yeah, that's the general view.
All right, that's quite interesting. You touched on brain structure. So I happened to come across a fascinating MRI study, and it was showing that children 9 to 10 years old have shown that larger brain volumes, including larger brain volumes in the areas of the basal ganglia and the hippocampus after performing higher aerobic fitness and compared to the control group. Can you please elaborate on that and explain more? What does that entail?
Yeah, sure. So basically, I think early on, studies started looking, so scientists started to use neuroimaging tools to study how human brain or the structure of our human brain in response to exercise. And the early findings show that being aerobic, being fit or highly fit or being engaged in physical activities can actually increase the volumes of our hippocampus and our basal ganglia. But I would say that's more earlier findings. And from more recent findings, thanks to the advance in our neuroimaging techniques, right now we start to use DTI, diffusion tensor imaging, and the results show that physical activities or being fit can also change the integrity of our white matter tracts. White matter tract is the growth of our is representative of our new axons, the growth of our axons. So if you have an optimal intensity or integrity of white matter tracts, it means our brain, different brain regions connect to each other better. So from the data we learn right now, we learn that a physical exercise can actually increase our white matter integrity between the frontal regions and the parietal regions. So these two brain regions are essential and important for our attention and everyday perception of the environment. And also show we know that there are stronger tracts between our prefrontal cortex and our hippocampus, which is beneficial for our learning and more complex behaviors. So yeah, that's two pieces from the structure ends. Yeah.
All right, it's quite fascinating. I mean, if we were to look at the hippocampus, it's really known as, you know, our memory hardware. Can you touch more specifically on what memory boosting effects would that lead to? You know, this interconnectivity, the increased connections, what would that lead to, and how long would it take for us to notice that significant improvement?
Well, that's a very good question. So right now, in terms of memory, we learned that the benefits of exercise is most pronounced in a memory called relational memory. So that means our ability to memorize the relationship between two distinct items. So as you can imagine, this is very important for our to guide our daily activity, and it's also very important for our learning. So you have to combine two different pieces together and to remember their relationship. So I would say that relational memory will be the most affected or benefited by exercise. And the reason could be that because our relational memory is highly rely on the connection between prefrontal cortex and hippocampus. So as you can imagine, the stronger connections can be a better relational memory, right? However, in terms of how long the effect can be manifested, I think we don't have a perfect answer yet as for now, but I will assume at least 2 months of regularly participated in exercise can be beneficial. But but again, I think the current data cannot really speak to that, how long or what is the minimum dose or a minimum duration of the exercise should be. to be beneficial for our long-term or our memory. Yeah.
All right. I mean, generally speaking, you know, the general public go about saying that at least 60 minutes of physical activity / exercise, because they generalize it overall, a day can have multiple benefits. And you're suggesting here that there, it's not yet, you can't yet recommend a specific amount or length of time. Is that it? The data is not sufficient enough?
So if we were talking about the daily dose,
yes.
I fully agree that for young adults or middle-aged adults, we should participate at least 150 minutes of exercise at a moderate intensity per week.
Okay.
But for children, it is highly recommended that our children take part in at least an hour of exercise daily, on a daily basis. Okay. So the recommended dose will vary, depends on the age.
Mm-hmm.
But that is the recommended dose for a single day or on a weekly basis.
Got it.
But for the long term, how long the exercise program has to be in order to manifest the actual benefits, I think is still a question to be discussed and to be verified by more research, I would say. Yeah.
Okay, that's a solid answer. We can't be answering it until there's more research out there to, you know, that would help clarify the situation. But, you know, putting these benefits into test, and you've touched on children since most of your research is, has been conducted around this population, how can we leverage exercise to maybe increase their academic achievement overall?
So I think it is a very new topic that scientists started looking at in recent years. So basically, from the data, we learned that even a single dose of exercise can actually improve children's performance on specific academy tests, like their reading comprehensions, or like their mathematical performance.
Yes.
So that's the effect of single dose of exercise. And if we move on to the long term, I think basically, the findings from long-term study basically replicate what we have found from the single dose of exercise. So basically, long-term participation, it could be months, a few months to even longer, 1 year.
Okay.
So we found that exercise range from months to 1 year should benefit on children's performance across different academic subjects.
Wow. All right. So it's practically, you know, besides other than making memories stickier, exercise can really help children stay focused on the task in hand. Is that correct?
Yeah. I think it's not surprising that exercise could actually benefit children's academy performance because when we think about, so the academy performance is actually the apply outcome measure of our brain, right?
Yes.
And if we already know that exercise is beneficial for our brain structure and our brain functioning, so it is not surprising that exercise show benefits to academy performance. But having said that, I want to highlight that so in terms of academy achievements or performance, it is a more complicated measurement. Because when we're talking about the academic performance, there are other factors other than exercise, like the atmosphere in the classroom, like there are many individual differences or other factors in the classroom that may impact whether or not a child perform better or worse in the academic test.
Okay, can you touch on those factors? I'm quite interested.
Sure. So I think the major problem right now is that there's always a gap from lab research or lab findings and what happened actually in the classroom, right?
Okay.
So I want to highlight that many of the scientific pieces about academy performance are taking place in the lab. So for example, in my former lab, we implemented academy tests in children. So they exercise and then they perform the academy test in the lab under a very well-controlled design and well-controlled environment. But when we move on this to the classroom or the actual school settings, there are other factors like the distractions from the peers. And also, I think there are other maybe social factors that may play a role in this. So I would say it's way more complicated when we're really talking about the academy achievements.
Okay. So what you're trying to say is it what you're trying to say?
Talking about the effects of it. Sorry, what's that?
Sorry, you were cutting off a bit. So what you're trying to say here is that these studies are quite fascinating and the results are astounding. It's just that they lack ecological validity. So when it comes to real life application, they fall short.
Yeah, I would say that's the one of the limitations from most of the exercise and brain connection research is the ecological validity of the findings. Mm. Yeah.
Oh, well. Well, speaking of those differences, are there any age and gender differences in the degree to which physical exercise can affect cognitive functions in children?
Yeah, I would say there are indeed age differences. So for the effects of exercise, I would say that populations who are undergoing brain development,
yes,
or brain decline will receive the largest benefits of exercise. So for example, in we know that children will receive, from meta-analytical study, we learned that children and older adults will receive larger benefits from exercise. But I would like to highlight that, because meta-analysis is a summation of the findings or effect sizes across different studies. So I would say more research that actually recruits populations across different ages can provide even more stronger answers to that. But overall, yes, there is indeed differences in terms of age who receive larger benefits from exercise. Yes.
Okay, so the older, the more benefits there are to significantly show.
Yes, if we compare older adults and young adults, older adults tend to receive greater benefits of exercise.
Okay.
But in the other way around, if we compare children to young adults, children may receive greater benefits from exercise.
That's quite fascinating. Yeah. Excuse me for trying to get a little more specific here, but I would like to touch a little on ADHD, if that's fine by you. So for all you listeners, ADHD is practically attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, and it's characterized by developmentally inappropriate levels of, you know, attention, hyperactivity, impulsivity. And Dr. Xie, you conducted a really fascinating meta-analysis that revealed the effects of physical exercise on children with ADHD. Can you please tell us more about it?
Yeah, sure. So I think you're referring to one of the recent meta-analysis.
Yes.
Basically, what we found from the meta-analysis was that the meta-analysis was specifically looking at the effects of a single dose of exercise. So it could be a single dose of 50 minutes to 30 minutes of exercise. And what we learned from the data was that a single dose of exercise can actually improve different subdomains of our executive functioning in children with ADHD. And so executive functioning is top-down brain processes that guide our daily behaviors. So it basically helps us to determine what we're going to do time to time and especially for, say, more complex behaviors or more higher-order behaviors. Mm. So I think apart from the meta-analysis, right now from research, we know that a single bout of exercise is most beneficial for the inhibition aspect of executive functioning in children with ADHD. So the inhibition is the ability to stay focused on the task at hand and try to resist the distraction caused by other factors in the environment. So it is very important for children's learning and their daily, I would say, classroom behaviors. And both from the meta and other scientific findings, we learned that a single bout of aerobic exercise, such as having a treadmill walk,
yes,
for 20 to 30 minutes, can actually benefit inhibition performance in children with ADHD. And also, the same exercise, we know that the same exercise can also benefit their performance across different academy tests, like their reading and their math performance.
Okay.
So, yeah, that's the general findings. But I think it's more important to highlight, I mean, while the finding is quite simple, yeah, I think it's more important to highlight the message that can be conveyed from these findings. Because right now we have, sorry, what's that?
What would you like the message to be?
Yeah, so I think right now in the UK, we have approximately 5% of children diagnosed with ADHD. So yes, this means that in a class of 30 children, at least 1 to 2 children will be classified as ADHD. And however, only half of those children diagnosed with ADHD could receive proper medications and treatments. And also we know that there are some side effects from these medications, like drowsiness, like bad appetite, or it is hard for children to, so the benefits of the medication will stop once the children stop to take the medicine, right?
Yes.
So I think the message from the meta-analysis, along with other data, is that it is time for us to think about to use exercise as an alternative treatment or alternative interventions.
Oh, okay.
To help ADHD children or to manage their symptoms. So I'm not saying that we should replace medication with exercise.
Yes.
I think the key message is that maybe it's time for us to think about to use exercise goes hand in hand with medication or other psychological interventions.
All right. So when building a treatment plan, you recommend incorporating exercise as a fundamental element of it. You're not saying that we should let go of medication in general, but incorporating it gradually would significantly improve their situation. Is that it?
Yeah. I think it's time for us to update the design of a treatment program for children with ADHD. Yeah.
Wow, that's amazing. And your findings are quite astounding because they really reflect how, you know, children, of course, as they get fitter, they're going to improve their executive control functions and they're going to become more adept at, you know, ignoring distractions, multitasking. They're going to be more adept at, you know, holding and manipulating information in their minds. So yes, physical exercise seems to come with a lot of advantages, which are hard to, you know, neglect. And, you know, building on all the research you've been doing, where do you hope to see change in the education system in general? And in the way physical exercise is incorporated?
I think based on all the science, I think it is essential or relevant,
yes,
for us to think about to incorporate physical activity as part of the curriculum in the schools. Because I'm just a neuroscientist, and maybe some some other experts could have better answer, but from my own perspective, I think it is relevant for us to consider maybe incorporate between class physical activity sessions, and we make it more well planned in the school settings. And also, it's time for us to think about to incorporate physical activities in the classroom. So, for example, I'm aware that in Finland and in Denmark,
yes,
and in some states in the U.S., the school started to incorporate physical activities with their course class materials. So they call this active lessons or active classroom.
All right.
Yeah.
What would that really entail? I'm quite curious because it's separate from PE, aka physical exercise class. What would that entail?
I think it is the core idea is to make the course materials more physically active, and because we know that physical activity can not only impact our brain physiologically, it can also impact our brain by other mechanisms. For example, if the physical activity is designed in a way that can challenge our brain directly, for example, if the movements embedded in the physical activities, it can challenge our attention, our multitasking, and to challenge our memory, the physical activity itself can challenge our brain function at the same time.
So it serves as a cognitive enhancer in some way.
Yes. So I think based on this idea, some countries start to incorporate these benefits. So they combine the physical activities with their courses and make these courses an active lessons. And they also conduct research in schools, and the finding is quite fascinating. They show improvements not only in children's cognition and their academic performance, but also in other their psychosocial well-being or their psychological measurements on their other psychological measurements. So as I said, I think from my perspective, it is time for us to think about incorporate exercise as essential pieces into our school environment and into our school programs.
I mean, that's an amazing takeaway, Anya. It seems that, you know, there's a wave of studies kind of exploring these unexpected links between, you know, mental and bodily fitness. And I think this should give us an incentive to, you know, maybe use it as a way to help children during challenging times, especially mentally challenging times with exams, creative projects. I love the idea of incorporating it into an overall psychosocial plan and not just using it separately as one tool. Thank you so much, Dr. Sia, for your time. It was a pleasure speaking to you.
Me too. Thank you for having me today.
Anytime. I'm highly grateful for you, you know, for being able to have you here. And for all you listeners out there, I've provided Dr. Sia's academic profile in the link below in the show notes, as well as links to some of his most interesting publications. If you want to support this podcast, please do subscribe on Spotify and leave us a comment if you have any feedback for us. I hope this episode has reminded you of, you know, this little cognitive pill that is physical exercise and its fascinating effects on the brain. Anyways, thank you for listening, and most importantly, thank you for your interest in science. I'll be talking to you very soon. Bye.